This meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. Representative Davids will move the March 19th minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Lesh, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair will move House File 2582, right? Be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Lesh, there are no amendments. You're ready to go with your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, House File 2582 is the new thing. All the kids are doing it. In fact, how many states have passed this now? 22 states. See, we don't want to be left in the dustbin of unhipness here. So what this does is creates a public benefit corporation that cuts the angle between nonprofits and current for-profit corporations in the state of Minnesota, whereby you can declare your purpose, what you're going to do for a public benefit. And that can be one of the aims of your corporation, and thereby ensure that you are not come after by some shareholders who got into it with the wrong idea and sue you for not maximizing profits, because maximizing profits would now be one of your main aims, but the other aim would be your declared public benefit. There's a lot of a need for this out there. A lot of folks who have different ideas about what they can do for the benefit of their communities. We think it'll be a fantastic idea, but to get into the nitty-gritty details, I have two smart people next to me who have worked on this for a long time.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. You could just identify yourself for the record.
Sure. I'm Kim Lowe. I'm a shareholder at Frederickson and Byron, and I'm a member of the business law section of the MSBA and the chair of the drafting committee that helped draft this legislation.
And my name is Jeff Oakes. I am a board member of the Social Enterprise Alliance Twin Cities, and I'm also a social entrepreneur.
And whomever would like to proceed, please feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to cover a few basic issues here, or basic ideas that Representative Lesh sort of laid out for you, but I'm going to lay them out in the technical, non-fun way that he did. First of all, I'm going to answer the question of what is a public benefit corporation. As Representative Lesh said, about 21 to 22 states have already passed legislation authorizing benefit corporations or public benefit corporations. What a benefit corporation is it's a for-profit enterprise that's formed under our corporation statute, which is 302A under our state, that has elected to also pursue, in addition to profit, some sort of social purpose, whether it be a general social purpose or a specific social purpose. So for purposes of our discussion, we refer to those as a hybrid. They live in between the for-profit and the nonprofit world. But first and foremost, these are for-profit enterprises. They pay taxes just like any other for-profit enterprise. They are funded by shareholders just like any other for-profit enterprise. So that's first and foremost what they are. Secondly, the question I always like to answer is, why do we need a statute here in Minnesota? A lot of people ask me, well, can't we already do this now under our current business law statutes? And the answer to that question is yes, we can. But other states have already put in place legislation that allows for these entities to be formed in other states. Most importantly, the state of Delaware has put in legislation that allows for these entities to be formed under the state of Delaware. So now, in the marketplace of ideas in other state jurisdictions, we already have benefit corporations that are doing business, that are formed in other states, that are coming here to Minnesota and doing business here in Minnesota. To that end, when we have entrepreneurs who want to form these type of businesses here, we want them to use a Minnesota statute to do that. So the reason we need a statute here in Minnesota is because half the other states have already put in place legislation like this, and we want to make sure that to the extent our entrepreneurs want to do this, that we have legislation in place for them to do it. And we also want to make sure that that legislation that we have in place really hits the needs and addresses the concerns of our state and actually addresses our unique sort of business law climate that we have here in Minnesota. To address that, we put in place, the Minnesota State Bar Association spent about, with some legislators, spent about 8 months working on this legislation. We looked at all the other states. We did a deep dive into what's happening in other states, and we sort of came up with the legislation you have in front of you, which is sort of a culmination of what other states have done, moving it forward and working it into our business statute. What our statute does that other states do not do is it creates an opportunity for two different types of benefit corporations, one being a general benefit corporation, the other one being a specific benefit corporation. It also puts in place a reporting regime that allows people who want to form these types of enterprises to file a report with the Secretary of State annually and report out to the public how they are pursuing their public benefit. So our statute puts in place, without putting in place an oversight authority, a reporting mechanism that allows people who get the benefit of this franchise to also be accountable to the public for what they say they're going to do. A lot of times people come to me and they ask, why would anyone want to do this? What is the purpose of this? Why, as Representative Lesh said, this is kind of the hot new thing to do out in the world of ideas. But I think for your purposes, maybe you want to hear what a social entrepreneur or why someone would want to do this. I'm just a lawyer. I just help draft legislation and help businesses be formed. But I think it's important for you to hear what a social entrepreneur really thinks about something like this.
Gerald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As I said, my name is Jeff Oakes. I'm a board member of the Social Enterprise Alliance Twin Cities. I'm also an entrepreneur. I've had success in multiple different sectors. I first founded a nonprofit organization called Breakthrough Twin Cities, and I then invented and commercialized an award-winning product that's now internationally distributed. And currently I'm working on launching a social business, which is basically the same as a normal business, except that we have an explicit social purpose, and we want to track every year our progress toward that purpose. And I'm testifying today because this forum is really going to help me individually to found the social business that I envision, but it's also, I'm testifying on behalf of the larger community, the social entrepreneurs that are out there wanting to do this as well, and all the investors as well who want to start and grow these kinds of businesses. This forum, the way we see it, is that it will help Minnesota's social business entrepreneurs in three ways. The first is that the public benefit corporation form will decrease startup expenses and legal uncertainty that currently exists. The second way is that the public benefit corporation form will give these entities a distinct identity in the broader marketplace that they're currently lacking. And this identity will be key to developing an ecosystem of investors and service providers that these types of organizations need to support and nurture them. And third, passing this bill will allow entrepreneurs to start these types of social businesses in Minnesota, where we do business, where we live, and not be forced to go to other states to do so. I would also like to share with you at this point that we have the support of eight endorsing organizations, including the Minnesota State Bar Association, as well as the Office of the Secretary of State, the Co-Roundtable, Social Enterprise Alliance Twin Cities, Impact Angels Investment Group, Growth and Justice, Legal Corps, and the Social Justice Commission of St. Patrick's Catholic Church of Edina. So on behalf of these organizations, as well as those who couldn't be here today, I would urge you to support the creation of public benefit corporations in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Evans.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what do these corporations do? Are they making something? Are they making widgets? Or
looking for a concrete example as well.
So it kind of intrigues me. I mean, I'm actually kind of interested in a Lesh bill here. I'm kind of in unfamiliar territory.
That's true for us as well. So, Ms. Lowe,
what am I making?
And Representative Davids.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, if you have a Chapter C or a Subchapter S, you're making things or running a business, you're trying to have make a profit, which I think is good. If it's a nonprofit, you're doing it for other purposes. Is this kind of like in the middle of that? And what are you doing?
Mr. Chair, Representative, these types of businesses will be doing the same thing any other type of business would be doing. They would just happen to have an additional purpose added on to what they're doing. So it's a great question because people always wonder, like, what does this do? You know, is it like a nonprofit? Is it like a for-profit? Well, we'll give you some concrete examples of some businesses out there today that are operating as benefit corporations today. They're either formed under another state's law or they're waiting for this law to pass so that they can start to operate under our law. One of them that you may know of would be Finnegan's Beer. Anyone have heard of that? Finnegan's Beer, they sell beer, just like any other beer company, just like Summit, just like any other beer, they distribute it. Part of their brand proposition, however, is that they will give 100% of their profits to alleviating hunger and poverty. So their whole brand proposition is, yes, we sell beer, but whatever money we make, in addition to our salaries, we're going to give that away to alleviate hunger or poverty here locally. So that's one example of something where it's practical regular old business. It's operating like a regular old business, but it has that additional social purpose on top of it. Another one that we have here that you may or may not be aware of would be Rasmussen College, Rasmussen University. They just elected or converted into a B corporation under Delaware law. Now, they're a for-profit university that educates multiple generations of educating students here in the state of Minnesota and other states. Their brand proposition is that we're not just about making money, we're about educating the next generation of worker, what have you, here in the state of Minnesota and the other state. So they have a social proposition on top of their for-profit proposition. Now, those are just two examples. There are numerous examples. Jeff can give you even more. That really, those are two that we have here in Minnesota. But there's many. It can be anything. It can be any type of business that has a Tom's Shoes that says, buy one pair of shoes, and we'll give one away. Same sort of concept.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Representative Lesh. Is there, I couldn't see it, is there a disclosure requirement in where the benefit would go to?
Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, there is. It is isn't just described by the testifier about laying out what you've done. Which section is that?
Is low?
It's in the bill.
Representative Lesh.
But the point is, Mr. Chair, so as in, you know, the quarterly profit reports for a typically organized corporation, with this, you would...
That's a public company.
Public company. You would also have to state what you're doing as far as your public benefit in this.
And Mr. Chair, to the testifier, so when somebody's making the purchase, they know that a portion of the proceeds are going to go to XYZ.
Let me step back, Mr. Chair. So the way these entities are formed is that these entities will put in their articles of incorporation, which are their formation documents that are filed with the state and the Secretary of State, their specific purpose. They'll identify specifically what they are going to do. That will be part of the public record. Then each year, and to the extent they hold themselves out doing that, they will do that through any other way that businesses do that now. Some businesses say, you know, we're only going to source locally, or we're only going to, you know, we have all sorts of stuff happening now. So they can hold themselves out that way, but annually, after 90 days after January 1st, they will have to file a report with the Secretary of State that says this is what we really did. So if they hold themselves out and they commit that they're only going to source locally, then they have filed a report with the Secretary of State that says, yeah, we only source 50% locally, then they haven't met their specific goal that they laid out for themselves and set forth and publicly proclaimed.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, so just to be clear, they're reporting on a state on that level, but when an individual came into somebody's store that was considered a public benefit corporation, there's nothing that requires them right now to disclose to that consumer what their benefit will be if they chose not to. I'm assuming they would, but if they didn't, that would be the case, correct?
Mr. Chair. You know, legally, any business is required to, if to the extent they are they're claiming they're doing something, they have to label that, and there's consumer protection, fraud protections that protect them now. I mean, if some business claims that they are doing X and they're actually doing Y, those consumer protection statutes will protect them now. These are no different than any other for-profit business that claims to do one thing and holds themselves out doing that way. So there's no additional labeling on top of that, but presumably they're going to want to proclaim that because there's some brand value to proclaiming that purpose.
Any other questions? Representative Loom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. Just a question on, well, first to follow up on Representative Anderson on the reporting of what you're doing. Is it basically just self-reporting, or is there some audit or some process to say, yep, you know, you said you're going to do this, and you reported that you are, and you indeed did this.
Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Chair, the legislation itself lays out in the last section of the legislation what is specifically required to be in the report. To the extent a shareholders or a founder forms a specific benefit corporation, they will report against what they specified they said they were going to do, and they will report why they didn't do it or how they did any sort of impediments or things that prevented them from doing that. If they're a general benefit corporation, they will report against a proclaimed third-party standard. So they will identify the standard that they're holding themselves up against, and they will report against that annually. But they will sort of pick their own. There's no, because this world is new, there is really no proclaimed standard that there's no SEC, there's nothing that's going to hold them out. There is no requirement that these corporations be audited. There may grow in the marketplace of ideas. Some investors may say, we're only going to invest in B Corps that are audited. We don't know that. This legislation doesn't require that, but that may come out of this. Like, as Jeff said, this is a new ecosystem, so we don't quite know what's going to come out. But no state at this point requires an audit, and we wouldn't want to put anything more burdensome than any other state does.
Representative Loon, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just one additional question on the social purpose in that. And so it's my understanding there's no tax benefits to this. And so is the benefit really just for the public benefit corporation to be able to proclaim this as part of their mission? Is that really the benefit to the company and to drawing attention to its mission? Is that the purpose?
Ms. Lowe?
Do you want to
or Mr. Oaks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that absolutely is correct. I would say, too, that the other benefit of it is that for the entrepreneur who's approaching, creating this new company, has a certain set of values that it wants to see continue as the company continues to grow and add owners. This is a really important thing that protects that social purpose and makes sure that it scales with the company as you bring in outside investors. And people, as they come into the company, recognize that this is officially, a legal corporation that has this as a social mission, and there's a whole statute that's built around protecting that. So that's the other advantage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so would you say that, you had mentioned that there's nothing that's saying a company can't do this now, but is there some impediment, do you think, or to not having this now under the current laws that this legislation addresses?
Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Chair. And Representative Lesch alluded to this. Currently, under our current for-profit statute, the law is such that a for-profit business can pursue a general business purpose. That general business purpose is defined to only include maximizing shareholder profit. There's a lot of debate on whether this is a truism or not. This legislation sort of says, we're not going to go into that debate. We're just going to give you the benefit of the doubt and say that as long as you do what you say you're going to do, do what you proclaim you're going to do, you're going to be able to defend or to avoid being sued by shareholders who are going to say, no, you can't give all your profits over to alleviating hunger. You need to give me a dividend to maximize my return on investment. So it's really meant, from a governance perspective, to give those business owners an ability to do what they say they're going to do, do what they want to do, and be protected from a shareholder suit that says, no, you're only supposed to maximize profit. And Jeff alluded to the fact that this generational change, we're not talking about the first generation of owners. We're talking about when businesses add more owners or generational transfer, where you have a different ideal of the next set of shareholders. And this really allows those businesses to embed that into their framework, and so it can be protected and not be attacked by, heaven forbid, litigious shareholders or securities fraud lawyers. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here.
We got two more people on the list, a couple questions, and then we're going to wrap this one up. So we got Representative Davids. You've already asked a question. So let's go to the member from Lyon. Then we'll come back with the Lyon. So Representative Suzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would ask Representative to my right not to hold that against me. But
Can't will.
Yeah, right. Just a question to the testifiers. Can the officers of the public benefit corporation then be individually held responsible? So if they fail to, I'm trying to look at this process, if they fail to kind of fill out the main mission, how are they held as an individual responsible from a public side, or would that be something internally dealt with, or how does that? And then I got one after that.
Ms. Lowe, briefly, please.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Under our state law right now, officers are not held responsible. We exclude them from that as long as they're taking orders from the board of directors. So you're really only worried about the board of directors. To the extent the board of directors considers and takes into account all of these social factors and these missions when it makes its determination, it should be able to not be held accountable. If it fails to do that, then a shareholder can bring a suit against them and say, look, you didn't do what you told us you were going to do. You didn't pursue giving all your profits to alleviating hunger. Therefore, we can bring an action against the organization. And then the statute itself, it lays out a mechanism in which that remedy can be achieved. The organization itself, the entity itself, will not be held legally liable. It's not meant to make them accountable. That doesn't make any sense. It's like you're going to save the whales. If you don't save the whales, we're going to sue you and you're going to pay us. That's really not what it's meant to do. But that accountability is really under that you'll get thrown off the board, you won't be able to be, you're not doing your job correctly. And it really does act, there's a judicial remedy section right in the statute itself.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of, as we're having conversations with our constituents, organization kind of comes to my mind, talk of like the Otto Bremer Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of have an entity that's set up to create profit for their main goal. How would you associate with that, and do you feel this is duplicative compared to what something like that is, and go from there?
Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Chair, the Otto Bremer structure is actually what we call a social enterprise. It is an operating for-profit bank that is owned by a charitable foundation. And so to the extent there's any profits that are generated by that bank, they are pushed up into the charitable foundation, which then makes their donations out to the charities that it supports. It also has a component that's owned by an ESOP or its employees. That is a very specific tax structure that is based upon a tax-exempt organization that has tax-specific benefits and responsibilities. We are not talking about a structure like that at all. This is a for-profit business that has no tax incentives, has no tax structural differences than any other C-Corp or S-Corp or anything else we've talked about. They just have the ability to have a social purpose built into their legal documentation that allows them the freedom to pursue that social purpose without having that threat of somebody saying, hey, you have to maximize profits, not pursue that social purpose. So they're almost apples and oranges. I see how they get confused, but they're very different structural entities.
Thank you. Representative Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief here. If the Lesh Davids bill were to pass, would, let's say you got a subchapter S or Chapter C, or you got a nonprofit, okay? If I'm currently one of those and this, the Lesh Davids bill became law, could they switch over to become this?
Ms. Lowe?
Mr. Chair, a nonprofit cannot convert into a public benefit corporation. The statute actually does not allow for that. We would not allow for that just technically because it's a very complicated transaction. An existing C corporation or S corporation could amend its articles of incorporation to then elect to become a benefit corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Swidzinski, did you have a final? All right. Are there any other questions?
Did I catch you off?
If not, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2582 will be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lesh. Thank you, Ms. Lowe, and thank you, Mr. Oaks.
I don't know where it's
General Register?
That's what it says. You want the consent calendar, Representative Lesh? We
can do that.
I mean, now that it's an Atkins-David's Lesh bill, and happy. And Mr. Pender's on it, too, I understand. So we're good to go. Thank you. Is Representative Hortman here yet? I don't see her. We're going to take her bill as soon as she gets back. She's testifying in another committee or has a bill up in another committee. Representative Mahoney? Was here? Is here? There he is. Form 8, House File 2605 is Representative Mahoney's bill. The chair will move that House File 2605 be referred to the General Register. Representative Mahoney, my understanding is the A1 is your amendment, an author's amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair.
So the chair will move that amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the scrap metal bill. Everybody is still in agreement. The amendment set the dollar figure. That's what we had to come back this year, or the charge for each transaction. And it's been in the bill. It was at 68 cents. They've come to agreement and said it needs to be 72 cents per transaction. So whether it's 100 pieces you're selling or one piece, it's still a 72 cents charge. They have, you know, I don't know how, last time I was here, you wanted it done in 30 seconds. I think I got it done in 15, so I'm going to try and do that.
You got extra time this time.
Oh, I do.
All right, that's all, though. Next.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
Just recently, there was a development of the one of the participants in this coalition asked to look at a product being developed in Michigan. They are doing that. They want to put this implementation on hold for a while. That is the other part. If you look at the amendment, it's the enforcement grace period. It may not be enforced until October 21st, 2015. So they will be, they will render a decision on the other system by June 1st, 2014 as to whether it's preferable to the APS. Mr. Chair, any changes that will be needed will have to come back next year. That's the bill as it is. It, basically, we came back to bring forth in front of you the cost for this particular system per transaction and to extend the date.
And thank you, Representative Mahoney. Are you aware of any opposition to the bill left at this point?
I am not.
Okay. I do see you've got a, there's a couple of folks that have signed up to testify, Ms. Lesh and Mr. Eskenson. They're certainly welcome to do so, but in light of the fact that you seem to have found a nice common ground, it's
Mr. Chair, I actually had a dream last night that we killed the Lesh bill and we let that last one go.
You know,
that was the other Lesh bill was supposed to be jumbled up. It is Lesh Day in the Commerce Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Melissa Lesh of City of Minneapolis.
Jeremy Essenson, Stinson Leonard Street here on behalf of the scrap metal industry.
And we're just here, I think, as representatives for the work group that was tasked in the 2013 legislation to come together, industry representatives, law enforcement, other stakeholders, to develop a system that worked for all parties to move forward with the scrap metal legislation from last year. The group's been working together very well. We did find out that there are some other alternatives we might want to take some time to do our due diligence to look at. So as Representative Mahoney said, we're just asking for a little extra time in this bill and moving forward with the fee that was our charge from last year's bill. But that's, I think, it for us.
And Mr. Eskenson, anything to add? Don't screw this up, I guess, is the main advice here. Could you get your chair a little lower to the ground, however?
Mr. Chair, it's as low as it goes. No, we really appreciate, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we really appreciate the opportunity to take a few extra minutes to look at this other system, evaluate its merits, and we think this amendment actually takes care of that and then gives law enforcement a couple of additional tools, including a statewide registration system, to make sure that we're getting hold of everybody who's doing this sort of work statewide.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that desires to testify? Are there questions from members? I saw Representative Hoppe and then Representative Dean. Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, is this the same bill you've been working on for, I don't know, 8-10 years? Quite a while?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I think I've worked on this for 3 years. The other one that's about in 10 years is a little long, would be more contentious.
Well, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, this is a really nice example of working with all sides and trying to find that elusive peace in the valley. So nice work. Thank you to everybody. It's nice that we have something that's being worked on in a nice multi-year conglomerative. Now, what word am I trying to say?
It's all good.
Collaborative fashion. Thank you.
You and Yogi Berra. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I'm just excited to see you carrying a bill that's going to impact Minneapolis positively.
Ba-dum-bum.
Working on them.
Any other questions or concerns? Seeing, well, yeah, before there are any other questions or concerns.
I'm very peaceful at the moment because the bill is, I still need his vote. I mean,
And on that high note, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2605 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Thank you, Ms. Lesh. Thank you, Mr. Eskenson.
You got a lot of cookies. Is there a point to that?
That's for you. Next up is... Representative Slocum moves House File 2659. be referred to the general register. There are no amendments, as I understand it, Representative Slocum, so to your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this will be one of the quickest, easiest, and cleanest unsessioned bills you're going to see.
Well done.
I'd like to move House File 2659.
Okay, your bill's been moved. Representative Slocum, to your bill.
Thank you. What the bill does is it exempts threaders from cosmetology licensing requirements. You may say to yourself, what is a threader? Which is exactly what I said to myself. What is a threader? Never heard of it. Never heard of it. And occasionally I do read Cosmo. And so a threader, threading is a method of removing hair from the eyebrows, upper lip, or other body parts by using cotton thread to gently pull the hair from the follicles. Okay? It does not include the use of any chemicals or wax. It's 100% natural. The Minnesota Board of Cosmetologists Examiners supports the bill. The licensing board held multiple hearings and decided to exempt threaders from the state licensing requirement in February of 2013. The board unanimously supports this bill that codifies the exemption from statute. Threading is safe, simple, and relatively painless natural hair removal system. Threading does not present health or safety risks. No one's gone to the hospital. There has been no problems with this. Threaders learn from their grandparents, parents, and friends, so it's kind of a passed down traditional kind of thing. It's not part of the 1,550-hour cosmetologist curriculum. It's not part of the 600 hours of esthetician, and boy, I butchered that one, curriculum, either. No, it's not just Hoppy, although Hoppy did sign on to this bill, I'm happy to say. Mr. Chair, I have Lee McGrath to add some additional information as needed and answer your questions.
Good afternoon. Welcome back, Mr. McGrath.
Chairman Atkins, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2659. This is truly a peace in the valley bill. In the state of Texas, we are currently suing the State Board of Cosmetology Examiners. Here in Minnesota, we work collaboratively with the board of the Minnesota Board of Cosmetology Examiners and gain their support for this exemption. I thank you for your consideration of this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. Are there questions or concerns for Mr. McGrath? If not, then Representative Slocum, anyone else that desires to be heard? I assume most people came to today's hearing for this bill. Seeing none, though, that want to speak to it, Representative Slocum will renew her motion that House File 2659 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you. We've got three items left. One is mine. We're waiting Representative Hortman. My understanding, Mr. Kwapik, is she actually has a bill up in another committee. So I think what we'll do is we'll turn then to House File 3264, request by the Minnesota Racing Commission. Representative Fritz, if you'll take the gavel for me. That's the one you don't want to sit in. Madam Chair, I'll move House File 3264 be re-referred, Mr. Kwapik, to Ways and Means.
I see you have a DE2 author's amendment, Representative Atkins.
I do. That would put it in the shape that I'd like to desire to proceed with it. I'll move the DE2 amendment, Madam Chair.
All right. Any discussion on the DE2 amendment, members? See none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, to the DE2 amendment and your testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's such a straightforward bill. I'm actually going to turn it over to Mr. DePasquale, the new director at the Minnesota Racing Commission, do a brief walkthrough of where they're at the commission, what the request is going towards.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Tom DePasquale. I'm the fairly newly appointed executive director of the Minnesota Racing Commission. I assumed responsibility in early December of last year. After serving on the commission for a few months, I was appointed to the commission in July of last year. Prior to that, I was assistant general counsel at 3M. So this is a new career for me, and I'm learning to navigate the state system, which is a lot of fun. Let me talk for just a few minutes about what's new at the commission and the reason for this bill. As you know, the commission's mission is to protect the integrity, safeguard the integrity of racing and card rooms in the state of Minnesota, to protect public health and safety, and to work in concert with the associations to foster horse racing and the associated industries in the state. In 2013, the commission came in for a lot of unwanted attention. Internal investigations of its then chair and deputy director and a consequent lawsuit for gender discrimination and open meeting law violations took their toll on agency resources and morale. A dispute between Running Aces and its horse persons also contributed to sapping our resources and strained important industry relationships. So what have we done to address these challenges? Well, first of all, we brought in good people. We reached out to other government agencies. We've defined expectations for excellence within our own organization, and we're addressing these legacy issues so they can be put behind us. The governor's appointment of my predecessor, Kristen Batson, from the Management and Budget Office, was a first and important step in righting the ship. She served admirably for 6 months, and I was appointed in December, and she was very helpful in the transition. The commission also has strong new leadership in Chairman Ralph Strangis, a business lawyer from Minnesota who actually chaired the commission at its inception in the 80s and 90s, so he's not new to racing. And previous splintering within the commission itself has been addressed so that we now speak with one voice through our leadership. We recently hired the former acting director of the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division and a seasoned officer of the Department of Public Safety, Jim Arlt, to be an investigator at our Running Aces site. We're in the final stages of hiring a deputy director. We have done a nationwide search. We had 110 applicants for the position. We are down to our final three candidates, all of whom have advanced degrees, lengthy industry, and operational experience, and we'll be making that decision within the next couple weeks. These changes and new hires are opportunities to build a high-performing, exceptional organization. MRC has also contracted with the Small Agency Resource Team to provide human resource and financial support. They've been extremely helpful to me. Their impartial perspective on our processes has been helpful, and they've identified several opportunities for improvement. It also allows our core staff to function on their core responsibilities, and that has been very helpful. In January of 2014, we asked the Office of Legislative Auditor to investigate the facts surrounding a purse contribution dispute between the Minnesota Harness Racing Initiative and Running Aces. The OLA was asked to examine our own internal processes and our oversight of purse contributions and paramutual auditing, and we anticipate that that report will be issued shortly. It'll help resolve a dispute between the horse persons and the track, which has been ongoing for too long, and it'll help us improve our processes for managing and overseeing purses. Last week, we settled the lawsuit by the former deputy director. The suit named the Racing Commission, the Management and Budget Office, and two individuals in their individual capacity. It was our goal to put this issue behind us as soon as possible, and with exceptional support from the Attorney General's office and a very good mediator, we were able to mediate in the early stage of the case, and we pressed for resolution without rehashing the personal animosities and other allegations that fueled the case. That settlement, it makes up part of our request. That is not money that we have available, so the settlement is contingent on ratification by the commission and appropriation by the legislature, which leads us to a discussion of the budget issues and the proposed appropriations bill. There's two questions. One is, where will the money come from? and why the need. The money is going to come from the Racing Commission Special Revenue Fund, which is money that we've acquired over the years from licensees, both the racetracks and the 6,000 or so individual licensees that we have each year. So this money is sitting in an account. It's not new money, but it's needed for expenditures that the commission is going to incur this year and next. The why we need it is because we have an $899,000 statutory ceiling, which we can't exceed. The budget for this year looks like it's going to be well in excess of $900,000. So in order to meet those needs, which includes the lawsuit settlement, the cost of the investigations that we incurred this year, actual separation costs for the former deputy and executive directors, those funds are all not accounted for at this point and will come out of this appropriation. So it goes without saying that we have a structural budget issue which is going to have to be addressed in the next biennium, so I anticipate this won't be my last visit with you, but for the time being we do need this appropriation for the reasons cited, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and I'll field any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, and welcome to the committee. And are there any questions for this testifier, members? Seeing none, Representative Atkins.
I'm not messing with that, Madam Chair. I would renew my motion that House File 3264, as amended, be referred to Ways and Means.
All right, Representative Atkins, your House File 3264, as amended, is referred to Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. And the bill is on its way. Thank you.
Chair, I just apologize to the committee and say that Representative Dill's committee, those are people with a lot of questions.
So we've heard.
Intellectually.
Welcome to Commerce.
You ain't seen nothing yet. Representative Fortman will move her file 2834 be referred to the Committee on Energy Policy. Representative Fortman, it's my understanding, though, that there is a there's an amendment to the bill. Doesn't appear to be an author's amendment, though. Is that Representative Johnson? Is that your amendment? It's my understanding, the A1?
My understanding that Representative Johnson was going to offer the A1.
Okay. Representative Johnson, can you explain, since it's not an author's amendment?
Hi. Well drafted. Thank you.
Just for anyone who doesn't have it, the amendment reads, because this was just recently placed in the folders, as part of the State Government Energy Savings Plan, all government agencies, departments, and subdivisions of the state of Minnesota, including schools, local governments, state highways, and the state office buildings, shall be closed on March 25th of each year. That would be today, in honor of Representative Sheldon Johnson's birthday. Were you aware of that amendment beforehand, Representative Johnson?
I was not, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the thought. There's no place I'd rather be on my birthday than in Commerce Committee with my colleagues. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And for anyone who's walked past the cookies, there are actually 60 cookies in that container there as folks walked in and were kind enough not to eat those. People were wondering why they're here. They're actually in honor of Representative Johnson's big birthday today. Congratulations and happy birthday, Representative Johnson. Do we want to put that? Should we put that amendment on?
We should put that amendment on.
I think we should. All in favor of Representative Johnson's A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. I can hardly wait till that gets to the revisor.
Representative Spadinsky doesn't get a cookie, Mr.
Let's see him engross that puppy, huh? All right. And it's going back to energy policy, is my understanding. Representative Johnson, you may want to continue to follow this bill. Maybe go to energy policy when it's next heard. Representative Hortman, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr.
As
Chair.
As amended.
This is the Department of Commerce's energy unsession bill. It repeals a bunch of useless and unnecessary provisions of statute, including those that regulate gas lamps. But my understanding is that the chair will be incorporating the provisions of this bill in the Commerce unsession bill, and this bill will form the basis for the Energy Omnibus Bill. With me to explain the energy unsession provisions is Allison from the Department of Commerce.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Members, Mr. Chair, my name is Allison Grubner from the Department of Commerce. As Representative Portman said, I'm just here to provide some brief testimony on the department's energy unsession bill. As you know, the unsession is the governor's initiative to make government work better, faster, simpler, and more efficient for the people of Minnesota. So the department went through our over 2,800 pages of statute, the most of any state agency, to come up with the items that we deem obsolete, unnecessary, redundant, etc. So I'm happy to walk you through what's in each section, if that's what you're interested in.
Thank you, Ms. Grubner. Perhaps just a brief description
of the
items.
Sure. Section 1 deletes a sentence requiring the department to do a report in 2008, which I can happily say we did. So we're just deleting that line. Section 2 deletes just a reference to something we're repealing in Section 3. And then Section 3 has a number of repealers. The items deal with low-income weatherization fund, which was passed in the 1980s, which is now obsolete. Oil overcharge money for energy conservation. This was also an appropriation from the 1980s, which was expended. It's now obsolete. There's a super insulated home demonstration project, which was completed in the 1980s with one-time funding. The Building Energy Research Center, which is referenced in 216C.38, is no longer in existence at the University of Minnesota, so we're deleting that. There's a Business Energy Use Accountability form that we're deleting, as well as the Decorative Gas Lamps rules and the Energy Conservation Financing rules, which are for a program that the state no longer uses.
Thank you, Ms. Grebner. Are there questions for the author, for Ms. Grebner, or anyone that desires to be heard with respect to the item? Representative Hortman, in light of the amendment, the request has come that there be a fiscal note prepared.
For the savings.
We'd be shutting down for a day. Are there any other questions or anyone else that desires to be heard? All right. Representative Hortman, just on behalf of Representative Hoppe and myself, we'll be following this bill, of course, to make sure that you try not to, don't you dare undo any of the actions of the Commerce Committee, or we'll, of course, have to call it back into the Commerce Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, and just so we're clear, the motion prevails, just so we're clear, and I think Representative Hortman alluded to it. But so that we're clear, the provisions that Ms. Grebner described, we expect to encapsulate within the Commerce Department's unsession bill tomorrow. The bill itself is going back to the Energy Policy Committee and is likely to become the vehicle for Representative Garofalo's bills and some of your bills and other members of the Energy Policy Committee. Representative Anderson, I know, had a provision as well. Unless there's any questions about that, just wanted to make sure that we were clear on procedural. Thank you, Ms. Grebner.
Thank you.
Next up, then, is House File, and last up is Representative Hortman's House File 2213. Representative Hortman will move House File 2213 be re-referred to the General Register. It's my understanding there are no amendments, so Representative Hortman, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm honored to carry House File 2213, and I have Ron Elwood here to explain it.
Mr. Elwood, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. First, I want to thank Representative Hortman for carrying the bill and Representative Hoppe for co-authoring it. Thank you very much. This is actually a small technical bill, but it has very large implications for the assuring marketability of title and the buying and selling of homes in Minnesota. Essentially, what this bill does is simply clarify that the statute of limitations for bringing claims of defective foreclosures is the law of the land, and you might wonder why would we need to do that. Well, by way of small background, Section 582.25 is called the Curative Act, and it provides that any mortgage is valid by operation of law as long as any of the defects that the many defects possible in a foreclosure action, as long as an action isn't brought within a certain period of time. So the door closes. And this section is so critical because what it does is allow title companies to issue title insurance. It allows lenders to lend. It allows realtors to broker real estate deals. And most importantly, it allows people to buy and sell homes with confidence. And the reason this bill is before you is because a few recent Minnesota Court of Appeals decisions and Minnesota Supreme Court decisions, neither having anything to do with the section we're amending here, actually could present a legal ambiguity as to whether or not this statute of limitations continues to be effective. And we need this to be effective to make the wheels of our housing process work. So it simply reasserts your legislative intent to make crystal clear that the statute of limitations stands. And this bill was developed and worked collaboratively, and I'd like to thank for that, with Legal Aid, the Minnesota State Bar Association, the Real Property Section, the Minnesota Bankers Association, the Minnesota Association of Realtors, the Minnesota Title Association, the Minnesota Credit Union Network, and the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. They all collaborated together. We all collaborated to do this and now support this bill. And then Section 1 simply makes permanent an exemption for small banks and small credit unions, small servicers in the bill that Representative Portman carried last year on foreclosure. Thank you, and I'll happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Are there questions for Mr. Elwood or the author, Representative Davids?
Mr. Chairman, I just hope committee members will support the Hortman-Davids bill.
Are there other questions or concerns? Anyone else who desires to be heard with respect to it? Then Representative Hortman will renew her motion that House File 2213 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hortman.
Thank you,
Mr. Elwood. That concludes our agenda for today. For anybody that's here, feel free to partake in the cookies. There's plenty of them, 60 cookies. That's a lot of cookies, let me tell you.
You should collaborate over.
But feel free to grab a cookie. Members, feel free to grab another. And again, happy birthday, Representative Johnson. With that, we stand adjourned.